We conclude this hour with a discussion with novelist Mohsin Hamid. He was born in Lahore, Pakistan, and while he spent many years as a young adult in London and New York, he now lives back in Lahore with his wife and children. He has a remarkable perspective through which to view the events of the last two decades. His novels, The Reluctant Fundamentalist and How to Get Filthy Rich in Rising Asia, explore Pakistan's relationship with the West as a booming economic force and as the home of some 180 million Muslims. His latest book is a collection of essays called Discontent and Its Civilizations, about changes in the world since 9/11. He began by speaking about how the brutal Taliban attack last year on a school in Peshawar, Pakistan, has become a 9/11 moment for his nation.
150 kids were butchered in their school in Peshawar in December. And now when I drop my almost 3-year-old son and 5-year-old daughter off to their respective schools, there are, you know, snipers on the buildings. I can't go into my daughter's school. I have to show an ID and she comes out to me. It's a very weird environment to go to school.
Hamid says that the events of the last year have changed the lives of all Pakistanis, and yet he still has hope.
I'm hopeful that we might have reached a tipping point, that the policy of the last many years, even decades, of supporting some extremists and fighting the others is giving way to realization that we have to fight all the extremists because they're not going to leave any space for the rest of us.
You describe in an essay that was originally published in the New York Review of Books about drones, the terror about living under the threat of drones. And there's almost an implicit comparison made. Which is more terrifying, seeing a Westerner beheaded by ISIS or living in a village where you know that a robot could come and kill you and your family?
I mean, they're both horrifying and terrifying. But I would imagine it's a little bit more frightening to live in a village like that because the chance of being somebody who's kidnapped and beheaded, of course, is quite small. But in the villages where the drones operate, the chance of a mistake and getting killed in a case of mistaken identity is higher. So I think the drone situation might be more frightening.
We think of the drones as machines, but the people who live under them view them as almost an apocalyptic wave of technology from another world. That's kind of what you were saying in this essay.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it would be like if you imagine here in New York City, imagine if there were drones up above, and imagine if a decision had been made that, you know, if somebody was seen in a position with a firearm, that a drone could take them out. And you're walking down the street and you reach into your pocket and you have this little twinge of maybe this machine will kill me. It's a sci-fi kind of existence.
But it's real in Pakistan.
It is real. And I think it has really bad consequences. I mean, it's completely understandable that in America people would want to use drones to take out people who are thought of as enemies of America. But the problem for me is that, one, of course, innocent people are killed as well. And two, it takes the burden off of Pakistan to solve its own problems. I think one of the big problems that we've had in this area is blaming the U.S. for a lot of the extremists who exist in Pakistan. And that's completely counterproductive, and the drones feed into that.
You and other intellectuals describe that there is no clash of civilizations, that it is a construct created by opportunists who want there to be a conflict between Islam and the Christian West. Do you think the use of drones actually makes it feel like a conflict of civilizations to the people on the ground in the villages of Pakistan?
I think it probably feeds into it a bit, because if you're sitting, you know, in some village in the mountains, you know, think Appalachia, some remote place among people that you know, not seeing a lot of outsiders, and suddenly this foreign power deploys this unimaginable technology.
It's War of the Worlds.
It is War of the Worlds. And I think the problem with it is it's much more useful to work together to sort of use the police and security forces to do this kind of work than to reach down from the heavens and sort of pluck people up.
In one of your essays, you describe your motivations for moving back to Pakistan, where you were born, even though you lived sort of a lifetime almost in New York and London. Like many Bush-era self-exiles from the United States, I found that London combined much of what first attracted me to New York with a freedom America seemed to have lost in the paranoid years after 9/11. The international border at Heathrow felt more permeable than the one at JFK, the London broadsheets more open to dissenting voices and more resistant to patriotic self-censorship than newspapers in the United States, and the naturalization process in the land of Buckingham Palace was, much to my surprise, considerably less torturous than in the land of the Statue of Liberty. What has eroded in America, in your view, through the window that you see?
Well, I've lived in America as a child for 6 years in the 70s, and again from about age 18 to 30. And when I return to America now, the sense of fear and of this overarching security state, which means that I get subjected to special checks when I board airplanes and put into a separate room when I come into the U.S. oftentimes, that sense of paranoia and fear is very different from the America that I grew up in, really. And when I left America in the summer of 2001 to go to London for 1 year, I had the feeling after September 11th and visiting for the first time in October of that year that the New York I had left was gone and a new kind of New York had come into existence.
What do you think of the symbols of Pakistan that are used by the West to describe what's going on there, the Malalas of the world, the Benazir Bhutto's assassinated. How do you view Pakistan and its depiction in Western media?
Well, I think that there's a lot wrong in Pakistan. So it's not mistaken to say that the assassination of Benazir Bhutto or the killing or the attempted killing of Malala Yousafzai were horrific acts. But that said, of course, there are people going about their regular lives. I've just come here from the Lahore Literary Festival, where Roger Cohen, among other New York luminaries, was present, or New York Times luminaries. And there we had thousands of people coming out discussing religious freedom, gay rights, literature, art, love. And that side of Pakistan often goes completely unnoticed here in America.
So when ISIS claims that it wants to bring on the apocalypse and create this kind of perfect Muslim society that's the end of days, and Barack Obama says there's nothing Islamic about ISIS. Are both right?
Well, I think that how you've characterized ISIS is correct. It's a completely misguided and dangerous philosophy, but I think you've described it correctly. When Barack Obama says there's nothing about Islam and ISIS, he's partially correct. There's nothing about the Islam that I recognize and grew up with and that I see practiced around me in Pakistan that is in ISIS. But nonetheless, ISIS does claim for itself a kind of Islamic mantle. And this Islamic mantle has its roots in a particular kind of Islam that's practiced in Saudi Arabia, among other places. And for many years, decades, the U.S. has supported the House of Saud in Saudi Arabia, which has exported a kind of Islam all over the world, including to places like Pakistan, which has given birth to ISIS. So, you know, when you have kings in a country like Saudi Arabia, which contains within it Mecca and Medina, the holiest sites in Islam, and they're going around with some, in my mind, very backward, retrograde, and dangerous version of Islam, and in a way they're protected and backed by U.S. power. When that gives birth to people like Osama bin Laden, who of course was an ally of the U.S. in the 1980s fighting the Soviet Union, and ISIS, which is born of this Saudi philosophy, I think there is something Muslim about it, but it's a particular perversion of Islam that occurs to a certain extent from within a U.S. security umbrella.
Mohsen Hamid is the author most recently of Discontent and Its Civilizations. Spectacular title. Great book. Thanks so much.
Thank you.